This is Edge Cases. I'm Andrew Patias.
And I'm Wolf French.
And what's our topic this week, Wolf?
Nearby peer-to-peer with multi-peer connectivity.
Well, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, I actually had to practice saying that. I feel like you.
Are there enough peers in that? maybe some sort of peerage you're going to get from
peer-reviewed.
Peer-reviewed, yeah, that's right. Okay, so I've got a little bit of feedback on our last episode. Nicholas Riley on Twitter suggested that we include the Python script that I was talking about last week in my topic as a GitHub gist, which I hadn't thought of. So I did that, and I tweeted about it from our Edge Cases Show Twitter account, which you should be following if you're not following it already. The Twitter account talks about when we're not going to be recording a particular week, so it's a good way to know that information. So that was in – so I tweeted about it last week, but we'll put it in the show notes for this week as well. Now, there was lots of feedback from people about the Python APIs I mentioned, which just goes to show you that when you talk about something that you're not really an expert in, the experts will come out of the woodwork and tell you how you're wrong. So there's one tweet from Ole Moritz, I believe that's his name, who says that the os.walk method that I talked about, excuse me, from Python, I had said that it returned a list of values of tuples. And it actually returns a generator, which is roughly equivalent to an NS enumerator. So it actually does the same thing that the Cocoa API that I mentioned also does. So, you know, probably everybody pretty much does it the same way for the same reasons, for the same kind of performance reasons. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. And then Matt Connolly tweeted about Ruby tuples. Now, there are no Ruby tuples, but you can do the things that you can do with tuples in Python with regular arrays in Ruby. So they don't need tuples. Mm. And which reminds me, you know, everything you can do, I can do better.
I'm glad you didn't try to fit tuple into that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Everything you can tuple?
Yeah, that's what I was hoping you would
do. Doesn't really work.
Yeah.
So that's it for feedbacks for me.
Okay, I do have a correction. Michael Tsai had a blog posting, tuples and NS error, and the main thing is that I mentioned on the show that I thought NS error was introduced with core data along with 10.4, and if I just looked at the documentation, it actually calls out like when it's required, and that was apparently it was actually born on macOS 10.2.7. Although weirdly, weirdly it came along it goes all the way to macOS 10.2 if you installed Safari 1.0. Isn't that weird? It's like, I think that means that Safari 1.0, when you installed it, actually installed a new foundation.
Installed, yeah.
Because probably WebKit.framework needed NS error.
Well, I don't think it gained widespread adoption in like 10.3, but maybe it did. It was 10.3 or 10.4, I think, that like they started really introducing it in a lot of other APIs which hadn't had it before.
Yeah.
So
but I think I use that mushrooms after a rainstorm type thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So we can get started. So in my opinion, multi-peer connectivity is probably the most important technology introduced in iOS 7. It's important for both technical and social reasons. And it's kind of crazy. So we carry these really massively powerful transceivers in our pocket, and you know, computationally they're amazing.
Giving us cancer,
and, you know, that too. They're computationally very powerful, and they also tend to have this, a good amount of storage too. So I mean, we're carrying them essentially these supercomputer transceivers in our pocket, and so you think that we'd take more advantage of these in terms of how of them being able to communicate amongst themselves. So I think things like mesh networking is really cool, and I guess I probably should put a Wikipedia link into mesh networking in general. But it allows, you can kind of like imagine a bold future where like nobody cares about network neutrality since everybody owns the pipes. The idea that, you know, we all have to pay Comcast our money to get decent internet, and so they become this bottleneck, and then they have mass amount of money that comes in, and then they buy lobbyists, and now they have mass amount of political power, and they can decide things. If everybody owns the pipes, where basically the internet was fully distributed, there would be no choke point for these big hosts and government to kind of tell us how we're going to use our networks. So that, I think that'd be a pretty nice future. It also, things like NSA eavesdropping, it would be hindered because folks would be able to communicate directly instead of through centralized servers with NSA choke points.
Wait, when was that class introduced?
NSA iOS,
eavesdropping, yeah.
Oh, NSA eavesdropping. Very nice. And then, in communication in perhaps disaster zones. So imagine, we have I don't think our cell tower infrastructure is going away anytime soon, even in the bold new future, but potential future, I should say. But in a disaster scenario where communications infrastructure is destroyed or severely hampered or simply overloaded, this would be a great way for people to communicate in the events of earthquakes, tornadoes, what have you. So Cult of Mac had a blog post scene called something about underappreciated iOS feature which will change the world. And basically it was a write-up about FireChat, which is a chat app that uses Apple's multi-peer connectivity to allow you to do nearby chatting. And it's the article itself is a bit breathless, but I agree with the fundamental points. And I think it is potentially... It could change how we do basic communications. I'm a big fan of the idea of multi-peer connectivity. And so when it came out on iOS 7, I basically expected a flood of cool new apps to ship with it. But crickets. FireChat is pretty recently came out. And there.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. It's not catching the world on fire. And I think it's two things. Number one, it's not well known, not publicized at some point, even though I think it was like in maybe the State of the Union or something like that. But really, unfortunately, multi-peer connectivity is almost totally broken for what people really want to use it for, which is peer-to-peer. And so I'll talk more about that later. So first, what we should talk about what multi-peer connectivity is. So it's a way for iOS devices to talk to each other directly with no host network required. So imagine you're a party or just in your apartment and you have two devices and they want to communicate with each other, like send business cards or move a file around or something like that. And right now we have to kind of like jump out to centralized servers for this, which is kind of crazy. I mean, the devices are right next to each other and you're physically proximate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you also have scenarios where like you have no Wi-Fi or the Wi-Fi is flaky, or this maybe Wi-Fi is good, but you just happen to be the peers are in different networks, Wi-Fi networks. You're on Comcast and the other guy's on some other building, Starbucks Wi-Fi or something. So the nice thing about multi-peer connectivity is that because the devices are able to talk directly, you don't have to share a common host network and you don't have to jump out to the internet to actually move data around. So hardware-wise, what it is interesting. It's not necessarily new hardware. So I should preface this section by saying that I don't know exactly how all this stuff works, which is, so experts, please come and correct me.
In the best edge cases tradition.
I did do some research, but I know just enough to say a bunch of things that are probably wrong.
Right with you, brother.
So I will tell you that it's what I found out. And this is one of the reasons I don't know too much about it is because it's kind of below my circle of caring about, because I'm just using multi-peer connectivity API and this is all kind of like how it's actually implemented. But in terms of hardware, it's not necessarily new hardware because multi-peer connectivity works on older devices like iPad 2s and iPhone 4s. So there's a Stack Overflow question called iOS Multi-Peer Connectivity and Android Wi-Fi Direct, where guy kind of asks, like, how's it implemented? And Android phones have something similar called Wi-Fi Direct, which we'll talk a little bit about. And a user, Barbazoo, I couldn't find any real name, so now let's use his handle.
What, you don't think that's a real name?
That would be a pretty nice name. Not as good as Wolf French, but, And he apparently did some research, and he found out that, and I'll link to this question and answer. It's not Bluetooth Low Energy or Bluetooth 4.0. Those advertisements were not visible. It is not Wi-Fi Direct. He apparently has a device that can sniff Wi-Fi Direct type stuff. And so that technology, which apparently is zone-like technology, is not what is being used by multi-peer connectivity. So Ramani, oh boy, Arunachalam is, and I'll link, wrote a blog post saying called iOS 7 AirDrop, Is It Really Wi-Fi Direct? And which I'll link to.
Yeah, yeah, I was curious about that, yeah.
He did basically some bandwidth tests, and he, based on what everyone is saying and kind of piecing together what the Stack Overflow question says and what his blog posting says, I believe it's implemented in terms of Bluetooth Classic and ad hoc Wi-Fi. Bluetooth, there are disadvantages to both. The disadvantages for Bluetooth Classic is that apparently the only way to really interact with Bluetooth Low Energy is kind of an open thing, and anyone can write an iOS device and create a Bluetooth Low Energy peripheral without having to, you know, basically talk to Apple and ask permission. Bluetooth Classic is basically treated as peripherals by Apple, and in order to communicate with them, you have to get basically a crypto key and stuff like that, and you have to enroll in the Made for iPhone, or it used to be a Made for iPod program. I think it's now Made for iPhone or something. Maybe it's made for iOS, yeah. And that is difficult to get into, and Apple extracts a significant toll for that. So it's sad that's Bluetooth Classic, and it's also sad that's ad hoc Wi-Fi, because apparently ad hoc Wi-Fi is an older standard. And where Wi-Fi Direct is newer and better, and ad hoc Wi-Fi is apparently limited in terms of bandwidth to something like 10 or 11 megabits per second. So this is one of the ways that Ramani was able to figure out what's going on. That he basically pushed big video files around over AirDrop, and he saw that he couldn't get very much bandwidth out of it. But for most cases, I'm not too broken up about this. It feels kind of badly that it's basically two older technologies kind of stuck together. But I'm not too broken up about this because, I mean, it does support the older devices. And it's not potentially always going to be this way. There's room for future growth. So
right. It's not built into whatever standard. There's no public standard which says it has to be these technologies. They could add another one in the future.
Right. So there is also it's also implemented in terms of Bonj. And so going up from the hardware layer here, it's implemented in terms of standard Wi-Fi, kind of Bonjour. But there's also Apple in iOS 3 created Bonjour over Bluetooth, which I believe that was part of the GameKit thing, where the GameKit apps could find each other and talk to each other directly. And because I'm not a big gamer, I haven't used that myself. But there's this project called Bluetooth Stack, which is a userland Bluetooth stack. And they have this really great wiki page, which I'll link to, which kind of lays it all out in terms of what version of hardware, what version of software, and what everything can do. And it's really a treasure trove of information, and it really clarified things for me. So I recommend reading this wiki page. So that's kind of hardware and software, how it's implemented. It's a Bluetooth essentially over ad hoc Wi-Fi and Bluetooth Classic. So first off, multi-peer connectivity is a terrible name. I think,
seriously,
it's almost as if, you know, we tend to make fun of the suits where we're like inject meaningless business terms into speech. As it's almost like we're just like injecting like meaningless engineering terms into a phrase here. Because multi-peer, I mean, isn't that just networking? But multi-peer connectivity, it's like almost the worst of, like, that connectivity almost seems to me as like a business suit type thing. But I think this is a terrible name, but I will say that multi-peer has a unique ability that gives me a little, I'm willing to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here with this terrible name, and that it supposedly can do chaining, and I haven't done this in real life yet. But the idea here is that my iPhone can see yours, and your iPhone can see Alice's. But Alice is too far away from me that I can't see Alice. But we still can all be connected. And the idea here is that multi-peer connectivity will manage using your hypothetical iPhone, Andrew, as basically a router between us, between me and Alice, so that we can communicate through your phone. And supposedly this is all seamless. Like I said, haven't used it in anger yet. But if so, that is pretty cool. That you can form like these chains. If you watch the WWDC presentations on multi-peer connectivity, I think it's pretty obvious that it's almost maybe like the ubiquity stuff. It's like that maybe the names was – I always get the impression that it, like the engineering name for multi-peer connectivity was like nearby networking or something like that, because there's nearby networking comes up a lot in the dub presentations for multi-peer connectivity.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels like such a better name, nearby networking. It almost just rolls off the tongue. So interesting thing about multi-peer connectivity is that it is iOS 7 only and is not on the Mac, at least not as of yet. It does use Wi-Fi and Bonjour, and so it seems like it should be pretty straightforward for someone to write an implementation for the Mac. But as of yet, I don't think Apple supplied one, at least not directly. It turns out, of course, the iPhone simulator actually supports multi-peer connectivity, and that is, of course, running on the Mac. And it turns out using the simulator is surprisingly effective. It's I haven't had any problems with it whatsoever. It's basically a true – I mean, obviously – well, it doesn't do Bluetooth. At least I don't think. I've only used it over Wi-Fi, and it's been really – works really well. So – and one of the things about multi-peer connectivity is that you think, oh, I have to have a bunch of devices in order to even get started in this thing. Turns out, no, because the simulator is so rock solid – if you just have one iOS device, you can use your Mac as the other peer, and you can totally, you know, correctly write software against it. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
So this is all kind of leading up to. I have a kind of a long history.
You're going to release some code, aren't you?
No, but I'm going to release an app. It's probably even better. So I'm working on an iOS app called Rumormonger. And does Rumormonger ring any bells, Andrew?
What, is like an app name? No.
Okay. Then this is good, because that way I won't be repeating the story to you. So there's this, there was an Apple employee, it still is a person, but I don't think he works at Apple now, called, his name is Harry Chelsea. And way back in like 1991, he wrote an app called Rumormonger. And it was a classic Mac app, obviously, because that probably was like System 6 days or whatever. But the interesting thing about the Macs back then is that they ran AppleTalk. And AppleTalk was AppleTalk had, you know, pros and cons. But one of the big upsides of AppleTalk was that it featured discoverability, that nodes could find each other. Could look up each other without a centralized server. And so that's pretty cool. And we just, you know, fairly recently got that with over standard IP networking with Apple's Rendezvous and then Bonjour, which I'll talk a little bit about later. So I first read about Rumormonger probably around 1996, but Harry wrote about it in Apple's Develop magazine, issue 5, and that was circa 1991. So Rumormonger itself probably came out in like 1990. And interesting thing is that he didn't want to actually use the name of the program itself. And so the develop article was published under the titillating title Asynchronous Background Networking on the Macintosh. And he didn't want to actually mentioned the name of the app, so he called it Lightweight Asynchronous Conferencing System, or LACS, and that's what he used throughout the entire article. And it's based on a 1988 ACM paper from people from Xerox PARC called Epidemic Algorithms for Replicated Database Maintenance. And the idea here is that if you study how epidemics work in terms of essentially viruses jumping from person to person, that we can leverage this type of behavior for other things.
Yeah, you definitely can on computers.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, so we have a long history for this. So I read that article back in probably 1996. And then let me quickly bring this up. Yeah, 2003. There was someone added to the famous Ward Cunningham original C2 wiki, an article on Rumormonger itself. And I'm not sure who wrote it. It seems to have a lot of details about it. I suspect it probably was Harry Chelsea himself. But It provided a lot kind of, you know, first it actually named the program as Rumormonger, and it kind of talked about how it was, how the, you know, kind of a give, instead of this kind of like, here's asynchronous background networking, and here's a theoretical epidemic algorithm. It kind of gave you kind of a bigger picture view of how this program could work. And of course, that's the name itself, kind of gives you an idea of what this all entails. So that was quite eye-opening.
Have you mentioned what it actually does yet?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
I mean, I think the Rumormonger kind of gives it away. But so in MacHack, either is it MacHack 2002 or 2003, Bonjour was introduced on macOS 10.2, and it was known as Rendezvous back then. It was renamed to Bonjour in 2005.
That's right.
Yep.
Rendezvous is such a better name.
It is. Wasn't there the there's the knock that it's this Bertrand's way of teaching us French one word at a time? But anyway, Bertrand. I'm sorry. And So I already knew about Rumormonger. It's like, oh, I'm going to implement this now using Rendezvous for the hack contest. And unfortunately, I came upon this idea. It turns out to be late in the game. And it turns out that the Bonjour APIs were more involved than I had hoped. So I wasn't able to actually get it done in time. I thought that maybe I'd even know enough about like delegates at that point to pull it off. But in 2002, 2003, I definitely knew enough Objective-C that I could definitely knock that app out. So I wasn't able to finish it, and I didn't finish it after MacHack either. So, oh well. So this has been...
So now, 10 years later...
It's pretty much. This has been kind of an idea that I've been kind of working on for a long time. So it turns out that Harry Chelsea did a blog posting about it in 2005, which is kind of making the rounds again. I think it might be because of multi-peer connectivity. So as I mentioned, he created the app called Rumormonger, and he uses this epidemic algorithm. So the idea here is that you basically, it's kind of like Twitter or maybe Facebook, where you have a text field where you can type in a rumor. And what will happen is that this Rumormonger will find other instances of Rumormonger on the network using network discoverability. Initially it was using Apple Talk, but now it's... I don't know even nowadays what... Well, I doubt Rumormonger actually was ported to Bonjour or anything like that. Maybe it did. I don't know. And it will find other instances using some sort of network discoverability and will propagate the rumors. And using the epidemic algorithm that I mentioned. And as an afterthought, Harry added the ability to send messages anonymously. And quoting him here, to my surprise, Rumormonger rapidly became very popular within the company. And even more to my surprise, 99% of all messages sent were sent anonymously. This changed it from an experiment in technology to an experiment in sociology.
Oh, I think you have mentioned this at some point. Yeah.
I've been talking about this for a while, so, and I think I might even talk to you about it at MacAC. So maybe that's the fog of time is becoming less dense. I also will quote an extended passage here because it's just so great that more than any other communication system I'm aware of, Rumormonger had virtually zero barrier between thinking something and sharing it with everyone else. It was always there.
The Twitter.
Yes. And that's why you should read the C2 wiki page on it, because he mentions that it's too bad that it didn't go anywhere outside of Apple for various reasons. Like Apple didn't grasp it because it could have been pretty big, actually. But it was always there. You just had to click and type to spawn a new message, making physical barrier minimal. And the messages you sent were anonymous, making the social barrier minimal as well. In a sense, Rumormonger became a window into the minds of the community that used it. Messages were posted that would never have been said out loud. The results were simultaneously fascinating, hilarious, ugly, mundane, profound, and contentious. The messages included company rumors, bad jokes, personal insults, new product ideas, and inexplicably long discussion of haggis. So I think he does a good job of kind of summing up. In many ways, now that we have things like Twitter, it's like we can see a lot of the aspects of it and the potential and power of it. But now we also have apps like Secret, and we can see some of the downsides of it in real life.
Well, yes, people are terrible. I mean, that's really the root problem.
Yes. But, you know, occasionally they get together and they build cool things. So.
Granted.
Not going to cut me too much slack on that one, but thank you. So it turns out that Apple management ordered it killed because of worries that Apple would be held responsible for libelous rumors.
Seriously. I'm surprised it got any traction at all, really.
Oh, I'm not surprised it got traction. I'm surprised it took them that long to order it killed. But the interesting thing is that Harry couldn't kill it because it was decentralized.
Right.
And so it turns out there was a management posted a bulletin on Apple Link, and it basically asked people to be responsible when using the network. But the funny thing is that it didn't mention Rumormonger by name because they didn't want to at all, mention it and give it publicity. So that was And so that's understand how it was essentially handled, but by being not handled.
The new Apple would have killed it right quick.
He mentioned that you could probably flood the network with garbage, and that would be an effective way. It's probably a way you could block the service type discovery type.
I don't mean technically.
Oh.
They would have just cracked down on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, how would you do that even? I mean, about the best thing I can come up with is that if you actually recorded network traffic and tried to figure out where these packets were originating from.
No, my favorite story from Apple, I won't try to derail you very long here, is the, I don't know whether I should even say this publicly, there was a while there where there was a policy where you couldn't add more RAM to your machine. You had to use the RAM that you were allowed, that shipped with the particular Mac that you had originally.
I remember that.
And maybe some people tried to get away with it, adding their own RAM to it. But the trouble is that if the people who were servicing it, like if you ever had to bring it in for a problem and they found out about it, if the technicians found out about it because you added RAM there and they noticed it, then you get in trouble for that. Like, I was actually kind of surprised that the mood was, just don't screw with this. Don't try it. Whereas really there was no way that they could have, it would have been a huge amount of extra effort for them to actually go around and check everybody every month. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of, fear will keep the systems in line. it was totally that. And I think that with that kind of attitude towards dealing with your employees, they could totally have just said, no, stop it right now. Or we'll, if we do find out, you're going to be in trouble. Oh. And that would have stopped most of it.
Yeah, well, the management of Apple in the early 90s was a lot different than the management in the late 90s. Yep. So, mm-hmm. And this was actually, Harry Chelsea was part of the Apple's Advanced Technology Group, ATG.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, those were a lot of rowdy people. So there you go. So my implementation of Rumormonger is, of course, uses multi-peer connectivity. My implementation is considerably dumber, that it doesn't actually use the Epidemic algorithm at all, that it does basically records hashes of text that you've entered, and then when the nodes meet each other, the peers meet each other, they just exchange lists of hashes and decide, and then they just do some set stuff where they decide who doesn't have what rumors, and then they propagate it to each other. Later on, I might upgrade to Bloom filters, which are really interesting space-efficient data structures that can basically they're probabilistic. But the interesting thing about them is that they can tell you whether an element is definitely not in a set. So basically, you can think of a Bloom filter as you put a bunch of elements into it, and then you can ask if an element is in a set in the Bloom filter, and it will give you one of two answers: no or maybe. And it sounds like kind of weird, is it in a set or not? And what's if it can't answer, if it can't ever say yes, then what's the advantage of it? Well, it's because it is very space efficient. And this is used by Google's and Safari's safe browsing, where they have this issue where they want to alert you when you're at a website that they know is malicious. They want to warn you about it. But on the other hand, although I'm sure Google actually would like it, although they did pioneer this, that you don't want to send every URL you're visiting to Google to say, hey, is this malicious or not? So the idea here is that they give you this Bloom filter, which is maybe a meg in size or something like that, that has all the malicious URLs that they know about encoded into it. So as you visit a site, it can tell you, this site is definitely not in this megabyte of data or whatever. You're safe to go ahead. But if it comes back with a maybe, then it can do a little bit more checking on that site, and maybe it needs to do a round trip to Google to verify whether or not the site is malicious. So that's a pretty cool use of a kind of computer science-y algorithm for practical reasons. So I've been kind of waist deep into multi-peer connectivity. So I have a few things I've learned. First off, it is so sad that it's not compatible with Android. Android, I don't know how pervasive Wi-Fi Direct is, but I know I know at least some devices have it, and that seems to be pretty much like the way forward. Like Bluetooth Low Energy for discoverability and Wi-Fi Direct for actually connecting and pushing large files around. I think it might be possible to write an app that allows Android devices to actually speak multi-peer connectivity. I don't know the extent of how much you can actually control the hardware on a given app, or if you need to root it first, or what that even entails, because I haven't moved to France yet. But I'm hoping that eventually that all the phones will just be able to talk device-to-device. But unfortunately, we're not there yet. Another thing is that Xcode 5.1 loves to crash when you have dueling standard outputs. So with multi-peer connectivity, almost by definition, in order for you to get your app really working, is that you need to have two instances of your app. And with the kind of the peer-to-peer aspect of it, is that these tend to be the same app. So you'll launch it once. So if you just have one iOS device, you can launch it once on your iPhone and then launch it again under the simulator. And man, Xcode just loves to crash when you do that. So that's really unfortunate. You could do things like use NSLogger, where you don't try to connect simultaneously to debugging sessions simultaneously. And just log things as you need them and do caveman debugging. Unfortunately, while NSLogger is really cool, unfortunately, network logging isn't a fit because you want to be able to test with things like disconnected networks and connectivity coming and going. And so the really nice feature of NSLogger where you can where you can have run an app on your local machine and then get all the SPU, that doesn't really work. So that's why I released basically, your best bet is to basically have a logging window right in your app. And it turns out that a UI text view is pretty crappy for that. I couldn't get it to work the way I wanted to. So I did release a new package in GitHub called JR Transcript View that is basically a UI view.
That's right. Yeah, and you did that a little while ago, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. This is me getting pissed off enough at UI text view. Yeah, the transcript view is built from the ground up using TextKit, and it's really simple. It doesn't support things like text selection or anything. The main feature it has is that it doesn't animate its scrolling, and it also has the ability.
Right, sure, yeah.
And it also, because that's this out of the corner of your eye, that animated scrolling man screw you with you. And it also does things like you'd want a logging view to do, where if you're at the bottom, as new messages come in, it automatically scrolls, but if you scroll up, it stops automatically scrolling.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it took me a little bit to figure out, but I think a day or two, but it's out there. So hopefully no one else has to go through that pain. The weird thing about multi-peer connectivity in terms of the API is that it actually is not itself designed for peer-to-peer. It has a concept of it's implemented in terms of very much like Bonjour, where you have advertisers and you have browsers. And you're like, okay, well, I'm a peer, so that means I want to be both. I want to see other peers, and I want to allow other peers to connect to me. And it turns out that multi-peer connectivity is very buggy if you try to simultaneously advertise and browse. And not only is it buggy, but also you end up having you have this issue that both advertisers and browsers have this concept of sessions. And it ends up that when you try to do a peer where you're doing both simultaneously, that you end up with two sessions, and it's very often very confusing which session to use for what thing, because you get delicate callbacks, and it's not always what session you think you should use to do what you need to do.
Wow. Well, so one reason this might not have been highly publicized is because it got shipped without it actually working all that well.
Yeah, well, so if it turns out it works pretty well, if for some reason your apps fall into roles where you have advertisers and you have browsers and they don't meet. Or if you're just going to one role or the other, and Apple ships, I think, some sort of like chat demo code where the people start, where the idea there is that you create a chat room on your device and then you vend it out to everyone else. And multi-peer connectivity will work in that case. But it's an entire issue where it works well when you have like masters and slaves or something like that, where you have kind of, you have the clients and servers type of idea. But when you have pure peer-to-peer, where you're just exchanging messages and trying to just be, you know, egalitarian, it doesn't work well at all. I saw a bunch of weird stuff. I saw disconnected state changes upon launching my application. I saw lost invitations, even when I tried to retry those invitations. I've had like nothing happen upon launch where like it didn't even like I launched my app and like it doesn't even start up correctly. And even really weird is that I even saw extraneous data when sharing a session across an advertiser in a browser, where I actually was receiving a data message in my delegate with extra junk padded onto the back, which that's an NS data. I don't even understand how that could even happen.
Well, do you have to change your passwords now?
Very good Heartbleed reference there. So fortunately, I had to rip my hair out for a number, probably, I don't know, 2 weeks or something like that. But I've been able to overcome pretty much each and every one of these. I do have one outstanding bug that, due to the nature of how RumorMonger works, does not really affect me. But so I should be able to actually ship RumorMonger even in the face of all this problematic API issues and this buggy nature of it. But I have to say that using multi-peer connectivity for peer-to-peer, it is not ready for prime time. Although, like I said, I'm hopeful because Apple's API itself, the API itself in terms of how it's structured for use of peer-to-peer is confusing, it's not fundamentally broken. You can definitely do it. So if they can remove the bugs out of it, it definitely feels like they have like some. If you actually look at the implementation of multi-peer connectivity, it uses threads, and I really get the impression that they have some state machines that are being accessed like how they shouldn't be, and things get out of sync. So I think that's kind of the nature of their bugs. And I think iOS 7.1 is a little bit better than 7.0x, but I can't really verify that. So the API itself, like, it allows Apple to improve it, and hopefully with each version of iOS 7 or with iOS 8, it gets better and will allow mere mortal programmers to just use it, without great amounts of pain. And of course, we also mentioned that in terms of hardware, even though it's limited to essentially 10 megabits per second right now, and Bluetooth Classic, the API is flexible enough that it doesn't define those things. It's all under the hood. So it will allow Apple to also evolve the hardware itself. So I would advise, don't try to use multi-peer connectivity for peer-to-peer yet, unless you want to endure a lot of pain.
Because that's just its name, right? That's not important.
That is part of the problem, right? And it looks like it should work. And I launched FireChat, and I looked at it, and I'm like, someone actually was able to ship an app like this. Great. And unfortunately, I was pretty able to replicate the bugs I was seeing in their app. Mm-hmm. So at least there's one shipping app that's using this technology, and it's demonstrating a lot of the same bugs that I've encountered and I've had to work around. So maybe if you don't mind kind of bugly doing what you need to do, you can submit an app and probably get accepted because no one else is using this. But yeah.
Oh, that's enticing.
Okay, that does it for me. Anything for you?
So do you think that the AirDrop implementation that Apple is using and on iOS is using this API?
I'm pretty sure it's not. But
you're sure it's not?
I'm pretty sure it's not, but maybe it is. It's definitely not using Wi-Fi Direct or anything like that. It seems to be using the same basic infrastructure of classic Bluetooth and ad hoc Wi-Fi. But it seems a lot more reliable, but maybe it's just the nature of kind of the fact that, like I said, multi-peer connectivity works today if you go into the role. And
yep.
And so maybe they just are structuring things right. So it's possible that they are actually using that, yeah.
Well, I mean, it would surprise me that they would put out something like this, because normally the reason why you put out a general purpose API is because you've been working on the implementation for the sake of a particular feature, and then you say, well, we'll put out the general API as well. And the reason why it's usually buggy in the first version of it, and I am talking in terms of Apple here, right? Not just every company, but the company I know about, is because they only had one client. And then that client needed certain things from them. So they made sure to get those things right, but then they didn't have the time to test and to fix all the other stuff, but they still wanted to ship something. Mm-hmm. That has happened over and over and over again. The two different patterns that we have are the APIs where Apple says, we're going to ship something that's not very good, and then we're going to drop it, basically. You know, you're going to have that that crappy implementation forever. And you can think of examples, right? Mm-hmm. There's things where they basically, you know, you keep thinking, oh, they're going to get it right this time. They're going to get it right. And then they never, ever do. And then people finally stop using it. And then the ones where, okay, we shipped the 1.0 version of it that wasn't very good. And then we rapidly iterate on it and get it to be better. So I'm as curious as anyone as to which pattern this will follow.
Yeah. I'm suspecting it's going to be the latter, but yeah.
Yeah, let's hope. And I think that's it for me as well.
Okay, sounds good.
So we'll see you next time.